writing and production. And that the first piece of that I felt at that magnitude was the Alan Jackson record, Don't Rock the Jukebox. That was the point that I went, wow, this stuff is working together. And of course, Alan and I have had this long relationship now, over 30 years of working together. So, yeah. But that was a pivotal moment when I thought, gosh, the production is working with the writing, and this is a great place to be in. I had one of those, but I never did complain too much, because it was such
one?
A big hit. It was a song called Sexy Eyes. It was recorded by a group called Dr. Hook. And I thought it was the most horrible song I'd ever written. And I thought, this thing is never going to get cut. And then lo and behold, it became like a number one song in 8 or 9 countries. It was ridiculous.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts. This is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I love talking with other artists about the power of songwriting and their journey to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. Please support the podcast by subscribing, or you can buy us a coffee, all through the website songwritertrysts.com.
Sorry. And my accent,
Seagull.
Seagull. I was like, Seagull, I bet my Australian accent's going to make it sound terrible. Nice
That's
to meet
okay.
you. Thank you so much for joining me for a songwriter tryst. We're going to find out more about you. I mean, and I don't know if we're going to be able to fit everything that you have done into one podcast, but we're going to try. I like to start by getting you as the artist to tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
I was raised in Louisiana. I was born in Texas and moved to Nashville in 1978. So I came to town actually to be a writer and not an artist. So
that was
my plan, but I kept getting record deals. Every time I would do a demo, I'd get a record deal. So just kind of backed up to it, because it seemed to me that it was more complicated to be an artist than be a songwriter or a record producer.
There you go. So what inspired you to be a writer in the first place?
I just wrote. From the time I was very small, you know, I was constantly making up little songs, and it was part of my upbringing. It was just there from the time I was like 4 years old on.
Okay, wow. So the moment you could read and write, you were writing songs. Were there people in the family playing a lot of music, or was there something that really inspired you that you listened to a lot of?
Yeah. My dad was a musician, so actually a country musician. He was a steel guitar player.
Okay.
So I grew up with him listening to Hank Williams and the classics and all that stuff that's important in the roots of country music.
So it was in your DNA. Do you feel like you had a really supportive upbringing, that your parents and home environment were like, yep, great, become a writer? They encouraged you in that because they had that experience. That's such a blessing.
Yes, it was super supportive. I you know, they constantly were encouraging and affirming and pushing. So yeah, that's what I had that in my family.
That's so beautiful. Not a lot of us get that, but I have noticed the artists that have that supportive parental background from a young age, you know, just have such a big head start. Doesn't mean it's impossible to do it without it, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, it helps. It helps.
So what was the catalyst to going to Nashville? Was it just the natural next step, or what did something happen? Goes, I got to live in Nashville.
Yeah, I actually went to a Kris Kristofferson concert, and one of my friends made it possible for me to meet him and play him a couple of songs. And it was just a fluke thing. I was in college So I ran. Wow. I asked the guy in the bar I was playing, and I said, "Can you let me off for about an hour? I got a chance to meet Kris Kristofferson." And he said, go. So I took off and met him backstage and played a couple of songs for him. And he said, "You need to go to Nashville. That's where you need to be." So
wow.
that's when I started coming to Nashville.
Well, very obedient. Okay. So then tell us about the process of becoming from a writer to an artist. Like you said that you just kind of got offered a record deal because of a demo, but was there a particular song or was it... What was it that they pushed you into it for?
I started having hits pretty quick, which was, I thought was normal, but it wasn't. So, I gathered the attention of most of the record labels that wanted to hear things after I finished them, you know, ahead. And they offered me record deals, and I went in and recorded most of these new things, but I couldn't. You know, I never could get off the ground with my artistry. So,
yeah.
And it wasn't heartbreaking to me. It's just like, I don't think this feels like I don't fit here. And then of course the production thing just played right into the writing. It became yeah. part and parcel of that.
Yeah. It's a massive part of the next stage of a song. And, you know, you can have full control further on if you're working in the production. So, can you tell me I want to go back a little bit to your songwriting as well. Outside of obviously being inspired by your parents, is there something in songwriting for you that, you know, you've maybe reflected on that you feel is your attachment to songwriting or what you're doing or how you're using songwriting in your life?
Yeah. I think partly since my father was an amateur writer, so I kind of grew up with that, with him, you know, writing ideas and playing stuff. And that was such a big part of the fabric of my youth. So, it just was there. You know, I never thought, geez, I'm going to make a living as a writer. I didn't think about it. It was just something I did and it was fun. And, then when I hit Nashville and started having success, I went, gosh, this is a great way to have a career and make a living. So that was the path. And I just, I continued to write, have hits, and then still pick up production projects to do.
So you're just having fun.
Yeah. And the music business can be very mean, you know? So my experience was that I knocked on a ton of doors and got turned down quite a bit.
Yeah,
but then it cracked. And once it cracked and I got a foot in, I could keep the door open long enough to go, "Hey, I'm a writer and let me show you what I'm writing." So it was, you know, how to sell yourself in 10 seconds to somebody to let you, so they let you in the door. So,
yeah. Okay. And so you did handle a fair bit of rejection. It wasn't all sweet, smooth writing the whole time you were there.
No, that was, yeah. And in Nashville back in those days, 16th and 17th Avenue was small, and you had these little houses with people writing songs in them. And so I was so taken by that I could, you know, I could walk from a house to a house to a house and hear somebody writing a song on the front porch. It was just incredible.
Yeah, I've heard it was magic. I was there earlier this year and maybe not so much anymore, but still a beautiful place for the world to go.
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah. So let me talk about then what's been your favorite part of your career so far? Like, where was the moment where you just sort of felt like your foot wasn't just in the door anymore, you were in and this is what you felt like really comfortable and where you were meant to be?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of writing and production, and that the first piece of that I felt at that magnitude was the Alan Jackson record, "Don't Rock the Jukebox." That was the point that I went, "Wow, this stuff is working together." And of course, Alan and I have had this long relationship now, over 30 years of working together. So, but that was a pivotal moment when I thought, gosh, the production is working with the writing, and this is a great place to be in.
I love that. I've always said, and this is why we call it Songwriter Trist, because I think that there's real magic when we find other creative people and we gel well together. And I think a lot of us are looking, especially if you're a songwriter, you're always looking for that Alan Jackson or that other person to kind of help complete you as a creative. And the fact that you guys have been doing it for 30 years, how do you find or have you worked out how the longevity of your relationship as creative professionals together has worked?
Well, I think first we're good friends. That makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But I think musically, we, in a lot of ways, we're on the same page. So that helps. Stylistically, my history with traditional country music and Hank Williams, people like that, he's a big Hank freak, you know. So the things that I liked and the things that I loved, he liked them too. So it worked.
I don't know why I said
it the other way, but it worked.
Okay. Is there one particular project that you're very proud of that you've done together that you go, that's something that, you know, we really just nailed it?
Oh, gosh, that'd have to be the 9/11 song. Where Were You?
I was a little girl who just woken up getting ready for school in Australia.
Yeah, that was a powerful moment for the world, not only us, but for, and then of course what Alan brought to it was just amazing. He gave the song, or he gave the world a song to heal, which was fantastic.
Where were you when it happened?
I was sitting on my back porch watching a woman's golf game. I used to live on a golf course, and the women were coming up to the turn at the ninth hole, and I had been watching TV when it started happening. So I went out of the back porch and I said, you know, I got some of the women. I said, come here, I got to tell you something that's happening. You're not going to believe this. So that was what I was doing that day.
You were stopping a women's golf game and letting them know what was going on.
Yes.
You had people around you. Honestly, I mean, I was a child, but I also thought that maybe I was looking for cartoons, you know, and every single channel had the same thing playing. And I was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And it took me a little while to realize that there was like a major catastrophe happening in the world. So that's a beautiful thing. And I think music is a very healing thing. I mean, I've used music in my life to heal through some incredible trauma. And it took me a long time because I've been writing songs since I was a child and it's fun and easy. It took me a long time to realize that not everyone in the world can write songs or sing or make music, but the people that can't still need music. As an artist, getting the music to those people so that they have that ability to heal from whatever it is they need to heal from is a real gift. What was it like for you, like moving into the production side of things? Was that a simple process? Did you do, like, how did you educate into that?
Well, I grew up, my uncle had a recording studio when I was a kid. So from the time I was about 8 years old, I was in a recording studio, you know, noodling and playing. And it was a very familiar ground to me. So it felt natural. Working with a great crew of musicians and watching your ideas come to life was so rewarding.
Yeah. Oh, a duck to water. What would you say your greatest advice for co-writing is in your experience for people who want to start co-writing or working with other people as writers?
Start with two writers and not five. I think Nashville has got where there's five and six writers on a song, which is fine. The economics are great because everybody gets a little something, but sometimes it gets... When you got that many personalities, it gets a little crazy. So start with two people, you and somebody else, and then if you want to add a third at some point, add a third. But it seems the process is more natural to me that way.
I love that. I actually always did two, and then when I went to Nashville, I found most people only wrote in groups of three. So it's interesting that you say that. And three does seem to be a pretty magical number. But we've also done group writes of 11 and 12 people. And sometimes it works great. And sometimes you've got so many clashes of personalities. But you do see that. You see lots of co-writers on songs these days that are they all starting in the room, you reckon, or is it just people are adding on and getting cuts as it goes on?
It. I don't think there's one way that happens. Obviously, successful writers, you know, surround themselves with a creative circle of people that they regularly work with. So they just bring those people back in to the fold to write a song.
Yeah. Fair enough. So, if you could go back in time and now, like with everything that you've done, and you could give yourself some advice, maybe when you were a kid or maybe even just when you first came to Nashville, what would you say to yourself at that point?
Enjoy it, and don't take any of it for granted. That's the most important thing, because when you're in the eye of the storm, which is a career that's beginning to really kick up dust, it's easy to get caught up with what am I going to do next. And you got to really stop and be thankful and be grateful to have that moment, because they will go away, you know. They come back sometimes, but they will go away.
That's what it's about. It's the journey, isn't it? Enjoying the moment. Because the end of a destination for all of us is death. I mean, why be in a hurry to get there? Just enjoy. I like that. And I've always been a big believer in that as well. So I love that, you know, you share that. Do you feel like you've always had that mentality, or do you feel like there was a moment in your career where you were maybe pushing too hard and to the point that you weren't enjoying what was going on?
I think my early career, I pushed too much.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, I want to ask you a question around your inspirations. Now, this is sometimes an easy one, sometimes not, but if you could collaborate with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Burt Bacharach.
Okay, why?
Why? Because he was phenomenal. He was just a melodic genius. And his impact on pop music through the years is just astronomical. So, you know, I could hear a melody and go, that's got to be a Bacharach melody, because just the way he approached it. And I was always a huge fan of Burt Bacharach.
How did you first come across his stuff?
I think I was liking the songs before I actually knew who the writers were, you know, before you really find out what's on the backstory.
Yeah.
And I can't think of one specific thing except Do You Know the Way to San Jose, which was a big record that he wrote with, what was his co-writer's name? I can't, that's terrible. But that was, once I became aware, then I caught him one night on a CBS special. And he was just sitting at the piano, at the grand piano, and he started playing all these songs, and I went, holy cow, he wrote that. Oh my God, this is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So, if it were possible to make for that to happen, he would, of course it's not, but I just think he was remarkable. Mm-hmm. Remarkable.
So you're still quite busy with Alan Jackson and other people. So what is your current day job? What's the next thing that you're excited, or what are you enjoying the most at the moment?
Developing new talent. That does it for me. You know, it's getting with working with someone who doesn't know yet how to get through the system. What a hit song is, why a hit song works, why a bad song doesn't work, you know, all of those things. But I've been doing this for so long that part of it is second nature to me. So it's exciting to get a new artist and go, show me what you do. And then sometimes you find these artists that are so remarkable that they just kill you, you know. And I think that's the way it was with the Zac Brown Band. I went in to see those guys, And I went, holy mackerel, what is coming off of that stage? There's something magical happening here, and I've got to get involved in it.
Yeah. So how do you, like, I mean, obviously you hear someone like the Zac Brown Band. What do you see your involvement being with developing your talent?
Well, it depends on where the artist is in their career musically. Yeah. A lot of artists are great musicians, so there's that piece. A lot of artists aren't musicians at all. Mm-hmm. So you got to spend time and get to know them and figure out what works for them, what they like, what they don't like. And that's super important when you're constructing a track and getting the right people to play on it. But most of these guys, I've been making records with these guys, most of the A-team, for years, so I've got a good relationship with them where I can just kind of gently nudge a certain way, and they're gonna get it, you know. And I think the biggest excitement for me is to get the track that the artist has just gone nuts over the track and go, oh my God, this is incredible, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing to be able to.
That wouldn't be hard for you to do that.
What's that?
I said, I have a feeling that wouldn't be hard for you to create something that the artist is going to go nuts over.
Well, there's hits and misses, but I think that's a huge, huge thing if you can make the artist get excited and want to sing the song, you know.
Mm. And what is it in the new talent, outside of just talent as far as being a good musician and being able to sing or perform on stage, is there something else that you feel is a big important part of an artist's journey to be able to develop them, or something that you look for, like, for example, a good attitude or a story or something that you find is beneficial?
Well, I think that artists are all at different stages in their career. And some are newbies and don't have any clue about anything yet. Then you run into these guys, girls that have been doing this for about 5 years. They have an idea of where they'd like to go, but they don't know how to get there. So the producer can step in and go, let me help you. And then you get the artist like an Alan Jackson that knows exactly what he wants to do. And it's black and white. You don't have to struggle. You know how to, you know how to make that record, make it work.
Well, he sounds developed. He also has the benefit of having an audience that he would know his audience and what they want as well. And that can, I feel like, because I'm a newbie, right? So that for me, I just have been working with different producers, developing sound, and my audience is getting to know me, and that's great, and I'm getting to know them. But knowing who that is going to change depending on where the sound goes as well. But I do feel like it's still a beneficial thing these days as an independent artist to be able to have the freedom of letting your audience know who you are. And you don't have to have the same sound. You don't have to have the same thing.
Right.
You can experiment, and just, as long as you're being open and honest with everyone. And
yeah.
so far in my experience, people are pretty open to that. Then I've heard the complete opposite, though, where it's like, no, you have to develop your sound first and you have to hit the ground running with this particular sound and target a particular audience, and it's more in-the-box type music.
Yeah,
do you have any advice around that for people?
Well, I think that's about your core. And there is an artistic core in you, and it's kind of what generates all your desire and music. So once you find that core, I think things unfold, but there's nothing wrong with seeking out to find the core and experimenting and doing this, doing that, because you're going to know pretty quick, this doesn't feel natural to me.
Yeah.
When you land on the core, then it's obvious. This is what I do, regardless of whether anybody likes it or not. If you like it and you love it, that's what matters, because you have to sell this.
No, I love that. I absolutely agree. Because you've got to, you know, I think someone told me once the worst thing you can do is write a song that you don't like that becomes a hit, and then you're left singing it for 50 years.
I had one of those, but I never did complain too much, because it was such
one?
A big hit. It was a song called Sexy Eyes. It was recorded by a group called Dr. Hook. And I thought it was the most horrible song I'd ever written. And I thought, this thing is never going to get cut. And then lo and behold, it became like a number one song in 8 or 9 countries. It was ridiculous.
One more lonely night for me.
That's funny. I agree though. Sometimes, I don't know if you've had this experience, but sometimes I'll have a song that I'll perform live, but it's not recorded. And I'll be like, oh, you know, maybe it'll be like a random end track on an album one day. And then you get people who love it and they're like, that's a single. That's amazing. It's like, how can you not I don't actually understand that, but I find it a quite fascinating experience. Have you had that experience where it's like, I'm not that attached to this song, but then other people, like a lot of other people attached to it?
Yeah, because everybody hears different things. And I think, I mean, I've had songs that I didn't feel great about. Uh-oh, my battery's starting to go down. Are you still there?
I'm here. Yeah, but we can wrap it up as well, just so we don't get cut off.
But I think that, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. I think that there are songs that I've probably not as attached to as others, but for some reason they touch people. And so that's the power of music, that it can still work through you not liking the song. So, or not being so. Yeah. I think that's just the power of music.
That's beautiful. All right. So tell us about some of the new talent that you're really excited about at the moment, or some of the projects that you're doing right now. And then we'll finish up for you.
Yeah, working with William Michael Morgan. Mm-hmm. And just be on him. He's got a single coming out on the 11th of August. Yeah, that's coming up. A kid named Bradley Gaskin, who just did 6 sides on, is one of the most incredible singers I've ever worked with. So we're in the process of shopping his music right now. So those are the 2 things that are on deck for me at this point.
That's very exciting. And you're still in Nashville ever since you moved here in 78. Would you recommend it still?
Yeah, well, I'm actually an hour outside of town, but it Nashville's tentacles go all the way to the West Coast. It doesn't really matter. So, yeah, you got to be where things are happening. You have to be in that place where you run into people that are doing what you're doing. That's important, because people in your hometown look at you like you're crazy when you go, hey, I'm a songwriter. They go, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I had so many people before I left my hometown going, you know how the odds are stacked against you. You don't have a snowball's chance in hell. And I just went, well, I got to go find out.
There's still a chance.
There's always a chance. That's the beauty of what we do.
Yeah. I love that. I always go back, because my dad was a pastor. So, and he played piano, which is my inspiration. But I always go back to, well, Jesus wasn't accepted by his hometown. So when I feel rejected from my hometown or people that don't understand, I just go, well, Jesus was pretty good. So, you know, he was one of the world's best storytellers. But so I just think, you know, you can't let it get you down. It's probably the first test, I reckon. If you can get past the rejection of your hometown, then you're probably going to be able to get through anything, because you really got to cut ties and move on and go into the world. So I love what you've done. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we finish up? You've been great and you've shared so much wisdom. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, I want to come back to Australia. I loved it down there.
Please,
I was there
do.
A couple of years. I would love to come back at some point.
Come down to, if you're ever in the Gold Coast or Brisbane, that's where I'm based, but I grew up in Melbourne. So I would come if you were playing, or if you were here somewhere, please come. I'd love to meet you. That'd be great.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe.
To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrysts.com. Crowd, no one can.